Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
I am unwilling to give up. That I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Kara Golden Show. Today, we're joined by Michelle Kelly, who is the CEO of the incredible, iconic brand, Lilly Pulitzer. And if you are not familiar with Lilly Pulitzer and all those beautiful, bright prints that they are so known for, we are definitely going to have all the information in the show notes, but you should definitely listen up because this is the CEO of Lilly Pulitzer. She is not the founder, but gosh, she's going on 20 years being at Lilly Pulitzer. So pretty darn close. The brand is known, as I said, for the imaginative prints and lively colors, inspiring consumers to shine bright and stand out. And this year marks Michelle's 20th year. And she is such a force. I'm super excited to have her here with us today to share the story and hear all about her journey helping to scale this iconic brand. So let's get started. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you, Kara. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Super excited to be here as well. So, Michelle, you have achieved tremendous success working at Lilly Pulitzer for 20 years now. That is crazy, crazy, crazy. I bet you didn't snap your fingers and become who you are today just by osmosis. So did you always imagine becoming the CEO of an iconic brand like Lilly Pulitzer?
Thank you so much. It's so nice to hear you say it that way. No, definitely did not imagine it. Probably the piece of advice that I'll, you know, give to folks at earlier stages of their career now, that there's no way I could have planned to, you know, have this role that I love so much with a company that I care about so much. But it is wonderful. So yes, it has been a journey. We can talk about various parts of it, but none of it was really expected. Yet somehow, you know, looking backward, it does make sense. And it's certainly, you know, just something I'm really passionate about.
For those listening to when you first got there, you were not the CEO. You did not get hired in as CEO. What has sort of been your career trajectory on getting there?
Yeah. So I joined Lilly Pulitzer right out of getting my MBA. So I was in graduate school. And the couple of steps I had taken before that, I always describe as, you know, they were great steps. I learned a ton. I worked hard. You know, I certainly did my best. I don't want to make it sound like it was a total, you know, accident. But I majored in business as an undergrad, partly because I didn't know what I wanted to do at that point. Then I was able to do consulting. Great experience, but in full candor, I chose consulting because I didn't really know what else I wanted to do. And I knew that that would be great learning. It was, you know, prestigious firm and, you know, would be a good experience. And it was great. And I, you know, developed wonderful mentors there. But then I actually applied to business school in part because I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I do share with folks that, you know, I was well into my mid-20s and still had not found that, you know, perfect spot. So maybe a little bit of a late bloomer on that side. But, you know, then of course caught up once I fell in love with the company. So I started with Lilly Pulitzer as a sales representative. They were building their department store business. This is 2003 that I met the founders who had relaunched the brand. We'll go into the kind of whole Lilly story at some point, I'm sure. But these two founders had relaunched the brand and had been at it for a while. And I just, you know, fell in love with what they were doing. I had already fallen in love with the brand as a customer and, you know, fell in love with what they were doing and the culture that they had built in the company. And, you know, just said, I want to do this for a few years. I certainly wouldn't have predicted it would be 20 years and could not have predicted where it would go. And certainly all the changes we've had in the company and within the business over that time. But I knew I wanted to give it a shot. So I began with Lilly in the August of 2004 as a sales rep. And I worked with all the department stores, totally got my butt kicked by really strong and wonderful, but tough buyers up in New York. And I loved it. It was fantastic. And I just really felt like I was able to sell with passion, but it was also good for me to have the experiences of, sometimes you don't make your numbers and that's really tough. No matter how hard you prepare, you need to really find another way and dig in. So having that sales experience was fantastic for me.
That's awesome. So thinking about what's for dinner, but you haven't had a minute to even think about it before now. Well, let's not make that mistake again. I have a tip for you. Factor. Stress-free, delicious, ready-to-eat meals, just perfect for spring and summer yumminess. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes or less. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, keto, vegan, veggie, or calorie smart. Factor has you covered. Discover more than 60 add-ons every week, too, like breakfast and on-the-go lunch choices. Snacks and beverages now, too. Stay fueled and feel good all day long with whatever they are creating over at Factor for you. And the best part? Each meal is ready to eat in just 2 minutes or less. And who wouldn't want that? Factor is your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. Get started today and fuel up for your spring and summer goals. What are you waiting for? Head to factormeals.com/golden50 and use code golden50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code golden50 at factormeals.com/golden50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. That's code golden50 at factormeals.com/golden50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. How often have you thought about learning a new language only to be stopped by that memory of yours from the last time you tried to learn a language when it didn't go so well? Okay, maybe it wasn't a language that you were interested in learning, or perhaps all those poorly written textbooks in your sixth grade class weren't that well written after all. I have a great tip for you. It's called Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program around, available on desktop or app. No matter where you choose to learn it or what platform you choose to learn on, Rosetta Stone works, and it truly immerses you in the language you choose to learn, quicker and easier than you ever imagined to. Maybe you're getting ready to travel abroad this summer and you want to learn a bit of Portuguese, let's say, before your trip. Rosetta Stone can help. I know this firsthand as I did just this before traveling to Portugal last year. I learned Portuguese through Rosetta Stone, and by doing so, I not only got a better grasp of the spoken language of Portugal, but it got me very excited for the trip itself before I went. They even have a true accent feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation as you are learning too. They've got you covered. Rosetta Stone's trusted experts are the real deal. They've been helping people just like you for over 30 years, helping millions of people to learn Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and my favorite, Portuguese. The lessons are 5 to 10 minutes long and include practical exercises so that you can pick up the language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. No English translations either, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language you are focused on, helping you get the long-term retention you are looking for. And who wouldn't want that? Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the Kara Golden Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Can you talk a little bit about the mission and sort of a lot more about Lily Pulitzer itself? I remember Lily as a little kid. I very specifically remember when my mom would play tennis and she had her whole Lily Pulitzer, beautiful, fun outfit that she would wear, or at least she would end up putting something together. I'm not even sure that you guys actually had tennis specifically, but my mom figured out a way to do it. So I remember the brand way back when, in the 70s, as crazy as that sounds. And it was just always happy, right? Like, it was just bright colors. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Arizona. So it was just super perfect. But I would love to hear a lot more about kind of the founding story, when, a lot, and just how would you describe it?
Absolutely. So Lily herself, there was an incredible woman named Lily Pulitzer. Sadly, she is no longer with us, but she lived kind of the, I think, 1938 to 2013. And so she was just, you know, an incredible person. I'm very fortunate I got to spend time with her. But her story is that as a young adult, she, it really was, I would describe it as, I think we all know someone who might fit this description as well. And every time I tell the story, there's, you know, someone in the group who might identify with the story themselves, or you know someone. But I think one of those situations where she had, on paper or kind of outside looking in, everything to be happy about. And she wasn't that happy. And really, you know, I think hopefully today we would have better diagnosis and better words for it. But, you know, she was really struggling to lead a, you know, an optimistic and joyful life at that time. So this is in the 1950s. You know, she was a young adult. She had married Peter Pulitzer. They had moved to Palm Beach, Florida, year round. Absolutely beautiful part of the world, but at the time, much more of a seasonal resort town. So things got very quiet and isolated during the kind of summer and fall months. She had, you know, three kids in about 4 or 5 years span. And I think she had a hard time admitting, you know, how, what exactly, you know, she was feeling, and having a hard time talking about it. And someone gave her good advice. Again, I'm sure hopefully by today's standards, you know, we'd be able to serve her needs better as, you know, kind of in the overall wellness and health perspective. But at the time, she did get good advice, and it was needing to do something really productive and purposeful with her life. So she started a juice stand. And the most important part of the story is that it worked. Starting the juice stand, I describe it as, you know, the kind of the grown-up version of a lemonade stand that many entrepreneurs have done as an earlier stage in their life. And she did it on Worth Avenue in Palm Beach. And the most important part of the story is that it worked. It helped her well-being. It helped her frame of mind. You know, she really set out to improve her life, and she did. She was successful at that. Now, in the meantime, she was spilling on herself because she had a juice stand and was, you know, chatting with friends who would come up and, you know, being kind of the social butterfly of the town at the time. And everybody wanted to be around Lily. She just had this incredibly magnetic personality and charisma and beauty. And she was spilling on herself. So many folks, probably myself included, might have said, well, put on an apron. But she did not. She always liked to march to the beat of her own drum. And she asked to have a dress made. She had a seamstress and had her make her a dress that could hide the juice stains. So it had to be, you know, color and print played a significant role there. And it had to be comfortable under the hot sun. She was working in Palm Beach outside year round with this juice stand. And those are still traits we keep close to heart today. And it had to be, you know, she had to look polished. She wanted to be comfortable. It had to hide the juice, and it had to work for, you know, the Palm Beach lifestyle that she was living. So the classic Lily shift was born. And as the story goes, eventually she was selling more dresses than juice to all of her friends, and you set off on this journey to, you know, really build this apparel company. She did it for about 25 years, and then actually closed the company in the early 80s. The business was out of the brand was out of the market for 10 years, and then 10 years later, she actually did not want to, she relaunched, the brand was able to be relaunched. She sold the intellectual property to the two founders who I ended up coming to work for. And then after they built it, however many years, in 2010, Oxford Industries acquired the business. And, you know, it's, we've been under their, under the parent company since late 2010. They're New York Stock Exchange traded. And here we are now, how many years later? It's 2024. So, you know, that 65 years of business and brand history in a nutshell, a lot of twists and turns. I think we're one of the few brands that has had two distinct entrepreneurial founding phases. I think that gets into our culture a little bit. But also I think there's a resilience. Lily herself showed a resilience in the way that she set out to improve her life. And, you know, the company has had a lot of resilience with multiple twists and turns, different ownership structures, different, you know, many different people who've contributed along the way. And, you know, here we are ready to celebrate the brand's 65th anniversary.
That's incredible. So did she play a role in part two of Lily Pulitzer then after 10 years when she took a hiatus? I mean, was she back in the company?
No, she was a wonderful advisor, and you know, was very, you know, was involved at a pretty light level. She wasn't, you know, designing the clothing anymore at that point, but she was always available for a phone call here and there, a meeting here and there, you know, really through probably about, you know, 2010-ish. So wonderful, wonderful woman and such an inspiration. You know, one of our biggest challenges today as a leadership team is, you know, many of us, you know, really have this deep love for the history and the heritage. And I think balancing that with the need to always move forward and the need to kind of, you know, not stay too attached or not get nostalgic in any way. Since fashion is all about moving forward, we really have to work hard to make sure we're finding that balance between the love of the history that can get a bit nostalgic, but also the excitement and the passion for everything that we're doing that's fresh and new and innovative, and, you know, recognizing that many of our customers, you know, have been born in this century at this point and, you know, care a lot more about what we're doing that's new and fresh and fitting their lifestyle. So that's definitely a balancing act. But we do always, you know, I reference the kind of core product tenets that Lily was thinking about when she was, you know, having her first dress made. And it's, you know, the bright, happy prints. We, you know, the story is all about setting out to make yourself happy. So we certainly try to incorporate that into every single product. You know, the colors, the prints for hiding the juice stains originally, the, you know, comfort under the sun and sunny skies. We are a resort wear brand at our heart. And so the tennis, the great story that you have of your mom, you know, being able to wear your clothing for that active outdoor, often resorty and often warm lifestyle, as well as kind of looking polished and beautiful. We always want people to kind of, you know, look really polished, but feel very comfortable. So those are things that we still embed in every single product decision today.
And you guys have done an incredible job because you still very much see Lily, right? In all
Thank
of
you.
The designs, right? And it's, or I should say all of the fabrics. I mean, the mm-hmm. designs have changed significantly right. over the years because they have to. But I think that would be such an interesting challenge, though, for any CEO to look at, you know, an iconic brand where mm-hmm. you people have an idea about the way it's supposed to look. And you certainly want to bring existing customers, loyal consumers along, but you also need to bring new consumers along in order to stay alive, right? And stay relevant.
Absolutely.
So how do you do that? I mean, how do you do that as a leader?
Well, I have to give, you know, so much credit to our team. I think we've really internalized that challenge. And so it's not uncommon for, you know, any conversation that we're having, especially in this kind of a year where we are celebrating a milestone anniversary, for any of the leaders in the company to pipe in with, you know, how do we, that exact question, how do we celebrate the heritage, but we know it has to be new and fresh. You know, there's nothing, you know, that a customer wants less than something she already has. So keeping mm-hmm. that balance in, it's very ingrained. I guess that's the first thing I would say, is that it is such a core challenge to our business that we've really internalized it and we talk about it. I think the company, our company culture, we've gone through phases where have been, you know, less and more, and then less again, and then more again, you know, different phases of being comfortable talking about challenges. And I'm really happy that, you know, right now I feel really good about our ability to surface issues. It's certainly probably related to the fact that we've had a lot of challenges in the past 4 years in the apparel industry that have been unusual and different. And, you know, we just had to get things up and out and on the table. But our team does a great job of kind of, you know, if there's something that's making someone feel uncomfortable, like, they will raise it and talk about it and, you know, maybe not know what to do about it. And a lot of times that core question of heritage, you know, mixed with innovation and where we are on that scale as, you know, kind of just overall matter of degree and what the company needs at that time is very ingrained in all of our leadership team. And they're so creative. I mean, we have artists, we have fashion designers, we have, you know, digital folks, and everyone's been trained in these different disciplines that all have creativity. Even our fulfillment center, you know, we just put in this cool robot that is really creative in how it's getting product to the customers from an operational perspective. So I think that's the second thing I would say. The team is really oozing creativity from all the different areas of discipline.
I noticed a lot of different products on your site, even pickleball racket
yes.
that was on. So you're doing a lot of, you know, fun, unique things, really understanding who this consumer is. But I would imagine staples play an important role in kind of the ethos of Lily Pulitzer. Can you share what comes to mind when I say that?
Yes. Oh my gosh. We have so much fun doing what we do. I mean, it's certainly work, and, you know, there are long days for sure. You know, you're catching me on a good one here. But we do have a lot of fun. We listen to our customer. We, you know, watch our customers. We ask them. We always get, people give us so many ideas, sometimes, too many, but they're always great and fun. And, nothing better than standing in one of our stores and just hearing a customer talk about, oh, you could do this and you could do that. We certainly have our little notebook of ideas. And then our challenge becomes, how do we prioritize them and how do we not get spread too thin? So the pickleball ones, the pickleball rackets have been really fun. It's actually a collaboration with Recess Pickleball, since we are not experts at making pickleball rackets. They are, but we are experts in print and color. A lot of our best collaborations come to play with that exact combination. And so that was really fun and really came from just watching. We'd had golf and tennis in our collection for many years, but our designers who work on those categories were starting to note that pickleball was fast growing. And we were, of course, hearing it from our customers. We all had to go out and try or learn to play pickleball. Some had more success than others. I had a hard time with it. And it was really fun to get to do things like that. So a lot of our collaborations, a lot of our, fun novelty ideas really come from a place of passion. Either the customer has brought something forward or we've observed. And, it always starts with a little bit of a, what if we did this? Now, your question about staples, you're absolutely right. They're so important to our business. They kind of give us the strong foundation and the flexibility to do some of the fun things. And we're really, really proud of some of our staple, products. We're so lucky that we get to launch all new prints every season, but it makes it really nice from just the business model perspective that we're able to often launch the new prints on styles that we know our customer will love. Of course, most of our, the listeners here can't see me, but I am wearing one of our most staple products. It's a top called the Elsa top, and it has been in our collection for almost 15 years.
Wow.
And we refresh it, and it's always what a customer loves about it is the fabric and the neckline and the fit. But believe it or not, there are always prints that she does not have yet. So we keep launching it. It's a great style, and we'll have to do something special when it's her full 15th anniversary.
So sustainability and kind of ethical practices have been such a hot topic, not just for the apparel industry, but frankly, for every industry. How much do you have to focus on that as a leader? I mean, when you think about, building the brand, because certainly back when Lilly Pulitzer was launching this brand, I mean, that terminology wasn't there. So nobody was thinking about that. But how do you think about that? And what are the things that leaders really need to think about? Maybe even new leaders who are coming into the space trying to figure out, how much do I need to know about it? How do I think about it?
Yes, great question. I'd start by saying, I don't know that whether we should have known it or didn't know it, I don't know. But there certainly was a point I would give a lot of people, who came before me in the apparel industry, a good bit of grace, because I'm not sure, we all have so much more information now and can really understand the impact that the industry has on the world. So for us today, it has happened gradually as we've all learned more. So for us today, I would, share that it's important to us. It's vast. It's massive. I think just the, thinking about the different ways we can impact the world, the planet with our business, it's vast. And even then choosing, which areas we want to get after is an exercise in prioritization and impact and strategy, all itself. So I'm really happy with the journey we have been on. I think it starts from a really authentic place that as a brand, we are about, people living these, joyful, confident, optimistic lives. And it's hard to be an optimist unless you're also thinking about, what's the impact we're having on the world. So for us, it's come along very authentically and probably for that reason, quite thoughtfully. We, you know, are really careful about, you kind of just want to do the right thing more so than we even want to, you know, advertise it or get credit for it. So we're very careful about not, you know, advertising anything unless it's like you've been doing it and it's, you know, we're very confident that it's going well and it has reduced our footprint. So we've had a number of great initiatives. You know, I have to give credit. We've got the green team. I think they're actually in a meeting later today that I'll hopefully get to check in on. And, you know, they've done great work. We've got the sustainability committee. It's very embedded in our product development to, you know, always be trying to find, is there a, you know, recycled yarn that we can use that'll have the same impact? You know, of course, we've got lots of standards on our, you know, the factories that we choose and that we work with. And it's wonderful to see a lot of the improvements and innovations happening at our factories around the world. That's really powerful. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, and that's one of the best parts is that it's not just, you know, we really don't feel alone in doing this. Certainly many, many other brands are keeping it a high priority. And then also just to see the factories all over the world making it a high priority, it really gives me this like very warm, you know, sense of we are all actually working on this together and what an impact we'll be able to have.
That's incredible. So when you think about collaboration, you and I were chatting a little bit about that right before we hit record, but it seems like you've done some collaborations or that's an important part of your business overall. You also talked about the pickleball collaboration as well. But how important is that to business today? Do you feel like, I always think about it as borrowing equity from other brands, right? And getting new consumers. But is that something that is vital? Like, do you say we need to do one a year or is it sort of opportunistic in some way?
You know what? It's such a great question. I'm thinking we should be more, you know, rigorous and planned about it. But I have to admit it is, you know, we approach it from a place of friendship. The brand is really all about friendship and community and people connecting with each other. Sometimes we feel like the customers like to communicate or connect and build community with each other, whether we're there or not. They just like that, you know, Lilly Pulitzer is something they have in common. So there's a lot of friendship and community and, you know, sparking ideas that's really well ingrained into the brand and to our customers. So I think a lot of our collaborations come from that perspective. This year, we were a little bit more intentional given that it's the 65th anniversary of the brand. So it just maybe gave us a bigger platform to be able to do collaborations. But I would say most of the time, it's, you know, if someone approaches us, we're like, well, how could this work? And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it's just hard to prioritize sometimes. But we always feel like we can give a dose of sunshine. Certainly our expertise in color and print can be applied a lot of different places. And there are, you know, so many potential brand friends out there who make products that we, you know, don't have a business in right now. So the collaboration really, you know, comes from that. A few that I can share that are live right now, we have a collaboration with Moke America. They have applied a Lilly print onto one of their very cool low-speed vehicles. If anyone knows Moke America, that is really fun. Definitely keep your eye out on the roads. I think 35 miles an hour or less, but the many resort communities.
How do you spell that?
Oh, Moke, M-O-K-E.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to check it out. Very cool.
Oh, you'll definitely recognize it once you see it. I mean, not the Lilly one. That will feel new, but I'm sure you've seen them. They're really, really fun to see on the roads. So they've just launched and I'm hoping we see more on the road throughout the summer. We also have a collaboration with Natalie's Juice. If you have tried that, it is delicious. That is just hitting the shelves right now. And then we have a collaboration about to launch with Badgley Mischka, beautiful designer, luxury clothing, really the first time we've done a partnership like this. And then we've got a longstanding partnership with Pottery Barn, and that we're actually about to drop a new collection there. So that's a lot for one time. We usually don't have that many going on at once, but really fun year. And it's been a ton of friendship and ideas and print and, you know, all credit to our team for making it happen right in time for the big anniversary.
So when you think about your tenure there, the last, you know, 20 years, going on 20 years now. It's so incredible. You've done a lot of different roles in the company. You've probably seen lots of things, but probably some mistakes along the way. Mm. Maybe things that were, you know, big challenges that you just had to get back up and fix that you didn't plan on, but you had to do it because that's what you do. What comes to mind when I say that?
Oh, gosh. Goosebumps. I think as a, you know, all of these challenges that we've all gone through in any of our lives and careers, you know, they do stick with you. And that's the point, right? They're learnings. And, you know, I feel many of them in the 20 years for sure. You know, I think that fashion and retail, you know, both, they're kind of, you know, subsets of the industry, and we play in both. I think, you know, fashion is about that newness and risk-taking. You're taking risks every single season. We do 4 product lines a year. No one, you know, every single one of them in the team is taking a risk. So that's very ingrained and built in. And then I think on the retail side of the business, you know, just selling, whether it's digital or in stores, which, you know, retail as a total, you know, it's, there's always another day. There's always another season. You always get to, you know, open the store again and start fresh in a way. So I do think that those two, you know, those two components really give the company a sense of resilience. Again, the company itself has had different ups and downs, and, you know, has been in the market, out of the market, relaunched, sold. At some level, I almost feel like we've been through, you know, almost everything, and now mm-hmm. we add in, you know, various types of economic conditions and, you know, a pandemic in the mix, and it really does sometimes feel like we've been through many different things, and that gives us confidence. It gives us energy. I think, you know, to know that nothing really lasts forever, especially in this business, and that can be a good thing or it can be a bad thing. It certainly helps us, you know, feel very grateful and honored, I think, on the days that are good, that we get to do what we do, and that, you know, there are great days where we can have fun events and celebrate anniversaries and, you know, have some good things going. But at the same time, we'll also feel like, well, gosh, that isn't guaranteed to last forever either. So we better get back at it. So that's a great, you know, counterbalance to that feeling. And then certainly, you know, the resilience side of things, I think, you know, anyone who's been in the industry for, you know, any more than a season or two has definitely developed some thick skin and some resilience. And we're definitely no exception. But I think we love what we do, and we know why we're doing it. The, you know, many of the incredible team members on the Lilly team, you know, they have their why. I think the company has its why around, you know, helping more people live the joyful lives that many of our customers do, and see the sunshine and create their own sunshine. That's one of our mantras internally. And then, of course, a lot of our team members, you know, they have a reason that they're doing what they do, that maybe even beyond that. And those are always really special and inspiring to hear when team members share that with me as well.
So you're selling online, obviously, mm-hmm. and yes. You have stores too. How many stores do you have?
We have 63 stores and a wow. few more coming up. I've had one of my favorite parts of the job is visiting new, you know, areas, development, shopping centers, and just trying to see if it would be a good fit for us. So I've been able to lean into that a little bit more in the past year, and that's been really fun.
So are you bullish on stores? We've had a lot of CEOs on who have talked about that. And, you know, obviously online is a necessity for sure for this consumer,
yes.
but how do you feel about stores? Are the malls staying? Are they, how do you feel about retail?
Oh gosh. I love retail. I imagine this could be an answer that will be coming your way more in the next few years than the past, but hopefully I'm the first one. So it sounds new and fresh. I don't know. I'm a big believer in balance right now. I think that the past few years we have done a lot of the pendulum has swung many ways. And whether that's the way we sell to customers, right? There was a moment, you know, probably in, you know, at some point in 2020 where we thought we might not reopen stores, and how wild would that have been? Thank goodness that that was, you know, didn't last longer than it did. But, you know, there was certainly a point where it's all about digital and oh no, you know, retail might not survive. And, you know, then there have certainly been points, I guess, before that and then afterward where it's like, gosh, the, you know, DTC only is a really tough business model and it's hard to make it work with the cost of digital advertising and, you know, returns and everything that happens online. So I think with our business, it never made sense to be all or one. We actually, you know, a lot of our roots of the business are in wholesale, and we still have incredible, you know, third-party retailers who are, you know, independent boutiques as well as some of the larger ones, names you'd recognize. And they've, you know, we've been in business with them a long time, and they're actually, you know, kind of where we started. So then, you know, stores added on, and then e-commerce, digital, the app, every way we can sell online now has added on. And I honestly think each of those business models has such a strong reason for being. And especially after some of the, you know, things we've seen in the past few years, I'm so excited about a balanced business model. That might sound really boring, but I'm really excited about the balance that we have. And it's in our selling model, of course. You know, I really just think there's an opportunity to be connecting with customers. Being a resort brand, we also, I think, have a little bit more strong reason for being within physical retail, because there are just, you know, you can't always get the item ordered and shipped to you on time if you're on vacation. And shopping is a really fun part of vacation. So, you know, I love our stores. We have such a great team in all of them. I think our stores are special places. We're not just, you know, selling product. We're developing friendships with our customers. We're having fun. We're letting friends, you know, kind of new friendships develop in the fitting rooms. That happens a lot. And then of course, digital is critical. We have so many places where we don't have stores and it's not practical to have a store. So we're really, you know, we work really hard on having the app, you know, be fast and speedy and fantastic. And that is really important too. And then you've got our, you know, third-party retailers, which I think are just, you know, one of the best and sometimes the only ways that a customer who may not know the brand and may not know to go to our website or to go to one of our stores, you know, she's able to find us by hopping into one of the, you know, great stores that carries us along with maybe some brands that she knows. So I'm all about balance right now.
Definitely.
Right? Yes.
I mean, life is about balance, right? That's what everybody's talking about. It's not just, not just for business. So for all the aspiring leaders and entrepreneurs listening, what advice do you have for those looking to kind of make their mark? I mean, you've had an amazing run on this company. We have a ton of universities that actually listen to this podcast, also graduate programs too, all over the world, aspiring entrepreneurs, but also leaders that are, you know, maybe interested in brands like Lilly Pulitzer, but maybe also think about, you know, one day I want to do that and I want to learn from people. What would you say is kind of the best advice maybe you have for people, or maybe something that you've heard along the way?
Sure. I've gotten so much good advice from others, 100%. I don't even know if I may have internalized it all at this point. So I'll do my best to give credit where it's due. On the, you know, I would say on the functional kind of what we do, I really do think there's no substitute for, you know, doing the work and getting in there. And I think that, you know, there were certainly points in my career where I felt like, you know, I wasn't growing as quickly or being promoted as quickly as some of my, you know, friends from business school or other peers in the business. And, you know, there were certainly those moments where I felt like, gosh, is that, you know, am I doing everything right? And I was pretty sure I wasn't doing everything right, because otherwise I, you know, thought I would be further along. And, you know, then there would be a moment where there was a great opportunity for me to grow, and then I grew faster. So I think that's, I do try to share that with folks, that from a, you know, career management perspective, I think looking back, I had much more of a spiral staircase than a true career ladder. There were times where I was learning, you know, I had a lot of lateral moves in my career, in some of those moments, I didn't feel like I was growing as fast, or at least, you know, moving into the positions I wanted as fast. I always felt like I was learning a ton. But I think, you know, of course, in hindsight, the spiral staircase worked out great. That was fabulous. And I was able to get a great grounding in many of the functional areas of our business. And so then when it, you know, came time for me to step into the CEO role, I was a little, you know, daunted for sure. But I always, you know, I could kind of reflect and be grounded in the fact that I knew a lot of how the company worked and how the business worked. And, you know, certainly didn't have all the answers and didn't know what kind of challenges we would face, but felt like at minimum, I was very grounded in what our customer was looking for and who our customer, you know, I just spent the time kind of doing what we do for our customer. So that was really helpful in terms of the confidence. And there's no way I would have gotten that if I had been focused on the career ladder or, you know, will I be CEO or will I be here 20 years? Like, as much as I tried to have a plan, I think in reality, the best thing that served me, or what served me the best from a career planning and management perspective, was kind of, you know, took things in a few year increments and, you know, will this job work right now? And can I do this job right now? And are the kids, you know, getting enough care at this moment? I think I did have great mentorship and advice from folks who helped me see that, you know, the career and business success, they come in chapters at a time. It's not one big, you know, 20-year commitment.
So true. Yeah. Yeah, so, so true. So Michelle Kelly, CEO of Lilly Pulitzer, thank you so much. And like I said, at the top of the podcast, we'll have all of the info in the show notes, but really appreciate you coming on and best of luck for continuing success in building such an incredible collection and company. And you are truly amazing. So thank you again. And thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks again for listening to The Kara Golden Show. If you would, please give us a review and feel free to share this podcast with others who would benefit. And of course, feel free to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of our podcast. Just a reminder that I can be found on all platforms at Kara Golden. I would love to hear from you too, so feel free to DM me. And if you want to hear more about my journey, I hope you will have a listen or pick up a copy of my Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Undaunted, where I share more about my journey, including founding and building Hint. We are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Thanks for listening, and goodbye for now.